Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, November 13th, 2015. And with me today, always good to have you here, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I am muting belatedly.
Well, you know.
Professional, just like completely professional.
Yeah, well, you know, I appreciate your professionalness. Anyhow, John Bartolaro, how are you?
I don't understand a word you guys just said. Good morning.
That's okay, John. I'll draw you a picture later.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and our sponsor is Downcast, which is pretty awesome. We'll be talking about them soon. Before we do that, though, today's going to turn into a listener comment day, and I thought we should start off with the iPad Pro, because we've been talking about it a little bit. Now, you listeners have been getting them in your hands, and so I thought that this would be a really good time to share your input. And then Brian and John, I'm curious what you guys think too. Now, Brian, you don't have an iPad Pro.
No.
I do.
Yes.
And John, you just got one.
Yes, it's sitting here on my desk.
No. He got one yesterday and hasn't opened it yet.
Well, I got busy last night, and
now I don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth.
That happens to me occasionally.
Gibberish.
I don't understand.
I'm a man of great patience.
Well, you are, and discipline, but that's just weird.
Yeah, that's just weird, John.
Well, truth be told, my wife and I were engaged last night in watching this wonderful Netflix series called Longmire.
That you could have watched on your iPad Pro.
About a sheriff in Wyoming. Yes, I could. I could. But we watched it on the plasma, and time lingered on, and then it was time for bed. So I thought, well, I'll get to it in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to move on to listener comments, because those actually make sense, John. All right. So Marcus Vex, after listening to yesterday's show where Adam Christensen from the MacCast and I talked about our first day experiences with the iPad Pro, chimed in to say that he picked up an iPad Pro, and Marcus has the 128 gig Wi-Fi model in silver. Congratulations, Marcus. We have the same iPad, except I went with space gray. So I approve of your choice. And he says it's beautiful, and I agree there as well. And then he went on to comment about one of the things that Adam and I were discussing, which is the notion that you need to find how the iPad Pro fits into your workflow and decide if it's the right device for you, as opposed to trying to figure out how to just shoehorn things together. And in essence, we need to think in a different way about the way that we are going to incorporate iPad Pro into the different things that we do. And Marcus says, and I will now start quoting from him, "I also agree that I am thinking about the concept of the iPad differently. Apps that I used only occasionally or not at all on the iPad Air now seem different and have more potential. For example, I used only Pages on the iPad only when necessary, but the size and space available in the iPad Pro can basically show a full page, and I will absolutely be getting the smart keyboard now." All right. Now,
bingo.
What do you think, John?
I think that's exactly what I've been thinking. The larger screen invites new ways of thinking, new ways of doing, new opportunities for the app developers, and new opportunities for the workflow. I was particularly interested in it from the aspect of magazines and reading. But as we were talking yesterday in a morning meeting, I see three phases for the iPad. The first phase is treating it as a touch device, a regular iPad or an iPad mini. It's just a big iPhone. And then phase two, you're moving on to the advanced features of iOS 9 and treating it as a more sophisticated device. And then phase three is finally where you work really hard to develop new workflows and take that extra leap whereby you're, you know, using the pencil and you're using apps together and you're integrating it into your workflow and you're using a keyboard and being more productive with it. And that's exactly what the listener was talking about. And that's exactly the angle I'm going to attack with it. I bought a Logitech keyboard with it, and it's a beautiful keyboard. I thought the Apple keyboard was actually not very good at all. And that's putting it politely. So I grabbed the Logitech keyboard, which is an awesome touch and feel, and same price basically, and I'm looking forward to using it as a more sophisticated production device and pushing the limits of iOS for productivity and workflow.
You know, we're pretty much in lockstep, John, except on the keyboard. When I tried Apple Smart Keyboard, I really liked it.
Oh, bizarre.
I know. It actually is really bizarre because I have not been fond of Apple's aluminum keyboards, and I assumed that it would be very similar to that.
Yeah, that's the difference between you and me. I like a short throw keyboard, and you like a long throw.
Yeah, I do. And yet, I like the smart keyboard. To validate some of the things that you just said, John, Marcus goes on to say that iPads have always been great for content consumption, but with the iPad Pro, it is great for content consumption and creation. Mm-hmm. And he says every time that he gets a new iPad, he finds himself using his desktop computer less and less. And he goes on to say, though, that the iPad Pro doesn't fully replace his laptop or his desktop. But he says that it will take a great white shark-sized bite out of it. And this is where I should cue in the theme to Jaws, but I'm not going to because of copyright. So, Brian, you have very distinct ways you use your iPad. And so I'm curious what your perspective is on this, even though you don't have the iPad Pro, just because you have some pretty cool ways you use your iPad.
Well, you know, I use my iPad for editing. In particular, so I read a lot on my iPad. I play like a little game called Game of War.
Little game.
And I in particular, I use my iPad for editing the novel I've been working on for a long time. And it seems like the iPad Pro would be particularly well suited to a lot of editing applications, especially when combined with a pencil, especially for old school paper and pen people.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll pardon the alliteration. And I don't know if that's going to require like special apps. I don't know. It definitely seems like there's a lot of potential to think differently about iOS as a productivity tool for this, and certainly, I mean, you know, all the drawing stuff should go without saying, the video editing should go without saying, and music editing should also go without saying. Now that it was pointed out, it was one of our listeners that pointed that out to us.
Yes,
about the possibilities of the Apple Pencil and music editing. I don't know. Because I carry my iPad around with me everywhere I go, I haven't been particularly attracted to the form factor, but I would certainly love to be able to have one for, you know, doing stuff around the house, but that seems extravagant even for me.
Jeff, I'm going to do something that will shock you.
Do tell.
Well, before, I was testing various small editors as a writing tool, and I didn't find my iPad Air to be really very suitable for writing and composition. But I'm seriously thinking about reinstalling Microsoft Word on the iPad Pro to have commonality with my desktop Mac and check that out as my go-to, you know, composition tool.
It's a great idea.
I agree. I'm actually not that surprised, John, just because I've been using an iPad Pro for a couple of days now. And that totally makes sense. And Brian, the way you're using your iPad, I totally get why the iPad Pro probably isn't the right choice for you. But as soon as an updated iPad Air comes out, I'm assuming you're going to jump all over that because that would be a perfect upgrade for you.
Yeah, my plan is to buy the iPad Air 3 that Apple announces in September of last year, of this year. I mean, this last September.
Yes, yes. As soon as they get around to announcing that September of 2015, you'll be right on it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's my plan.
Yeah. I'd love to keep talking about this, but there's more listener comments I want to get to. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys about Downcast. And Downcast is our sponsor this week, which is really awesome. And Downcast is a podcast playback and management app, and I'm using it on my iPhone and iPad. It's also available for the Mac, and what it does is gives you a much, much better interface for organizing and managing your podcasts than you're going to get with Apple's app, the actual podcast app that comes bundled with iOS devices. And it supports variable playback. So if you need a show to take less time, you can speed it up and it still sounds right. You can set up smart playlists, which is really cool. That's a kind of an interesting way to organize your podcasts based on just search criteria. And then it can synchronize where you are in a specific podcast across your devices. So I can start listening on my iPad while I'm sitting at my desk. But then if I want to keep listening on my iPhone when I take off to go run some errands, I can just pick up right where I left off and carry on. And it's really great. The app costs $2.99, which is totally a bargain for what you're getting out of this. And you should totally check it out. I'm very happy with Downcast. It is my app of choice for podcast listening, and not because they're a sponsor, but because I really like how the app works. So what you need to do is go to their website, downcast.fm/TDO. And when you do that, that's going to link you back to the app store so that you can pick up the app without having to search. And it also lets the Downcast people know that you heard about them on our show here today. So do that, downcast.fm/TDO. It's only $2.99, and it's $3 very well spent. So Downcast, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Okay, so back to listener comments. Here's one that I got actually just a few hours ago, and this one comes from Donna, and Brian, I think that it may be of interest to you because she's talking about the Steve Jobs movie.
Okay.
And what Donna says is, although I was interested in seeing the movie, I planned not to out of respect for Steve's family and close friends who protested the making of it. However, I hadn't told my husband that, and he suggested seeing it for our anniversary, so I thought that didn't count, and I enjoyed it very much. Which actually, it doesn't surprise me, Donna, that you enjoyed it, because I really enjoyed it too. She goes on to say, however, I guess I don't understand why parts of it were factionalized. And Donna, I love that word.
I thought she said fictionalized.
No, it says factionalized.
I think it's supposed to be fictionalized.
It probably is, but I like it as factionalized.
Yeah, fair enough.
She goes on to say, when you have a character as fascinating as Steve Jobs with so many great known interactions which could have been presented, I would have preferred to see that. Certainly, it would have been just as entertaining. All right, Donna, thank you for the comment. Brian, what do you think?
Well, so I haven't seen the movie, first of all. But I think a lot of people have that question. And I'm going to be honest. If I was making that movie, I also would have not – I wouldn't have fictionalized the darn thing, especially when it's being based on the official biography of Steve Jobs. But I do have sort of the devil's advocate view on that. Aaron Sorkin's goal seems to have been to capture the spirit and essence of Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he, Woz essentially said that, right? And it seems like Aaron Sorkin felt that he could best capture the essence and spirit of Steve Jobs, and this is, of course, the Steve Jobs up through Act 3, which is only the iMac. It's not Steve's greatest epoch.
Yes, and it isn't the Steve Jobs that his more recent friends,
right? His contemporary friends and in the circle knew, but it seems like he felt like he could capture that spirit and that essence by telling a story rather than relaying facts. And if you think about it, imagine trying.
Spit it out. Sing it.
I don't think I would have done it like he did, but I'm also not Aaron Sorkin.
I actually like the way he did it, and I'm okay with it being very fictionalized and inspired by events in Steve's life. And that's because the types of things that Aaron wanted to present in the story, to get them to fit together in the window of time that we had in the theater, well, he needed to take a lot of, I'll call it poetic license, to get everything to fit together, to give us the feel of Steve Jobs. And I found it to be very entertaining, and I feel like it probably did give us a very good approximation of what it was like to work with Steve Jobs or to be around him during that part of his life.
That's what the people who were there have said.
Yeah.
And to me, there is enormous value in that as fans of Steve Jobs. Now, I mean, you know, and I get why people are tense about the fact that anything was fictionalized. I get that. And I wouldn't have made that choice. But I think that the result that has been described by the people who knew Steve Jobs and worked with Steve Jobs during the times depicted in the movie, I think that is also a worthy and valuable experience to have as a watcher.
Sure. Yeah. And my guess is that we will see more documentaries about Steve Jobs over the years. And for the people that really want something that is just a chronological recital of what happened in his life, those stories will come along. And actually, the person I would
read the book.
Yeah, you could read the book, or like me, get partway in and just not like
the book. Go back and read the book, and then read Becoming Steve Jobs. They are companion books.
Yeah. Okay. I will do this. And knowing how quickly I read books, I am not worried about the time frame. Anyhow, the person that I would love to see make a Steve Jobs documentary, that's just a straight up documentary, Ken Burns. I think he could make just a very powerful Steve Jobs documentary. So anyhow, we are like pretty much out of time, but real quickly, there's one other email that I wanted to read and get your reactions to. So I'll hop into that one. This one's from Rick, and Rick says, and background, this is related to our discussion about the Amazon bookstore. And he says that we had a lot of great points. One that was not brought up enough is that he feels that they are doing the Walmart method of retail. Come in and undercut the competition and put in more stores than an area can support. Once the competition is gone, they take over. I think their book monopoly and ebook monopoly are doing this. Lots of small and or used bookshops have closed in his city. And Brian, we had this discussion, so I'll let you answer first. And then John, I'll let you chime in before we wrap up.
Okay.
Yeah, that is part of what Amazon does, and this is the Starbucks and the Walmart business model too. You go into a look to any particular market, you open more stores than that market can afford to put out all of the independents, to put out the weaker competition out of business, and then when they close, then you close your excess capacity and rake in the profits. I personally despise and loathe that business model, and I think that it is been very detrimental, especially with Walmart. It's been very, very detrimental to the middle class in the in this country. I can see that being Amazon's goal, but then I have to come back to the fact that Amazon is essentially doing exactly what I've been wanting a bookstore to do.
Yeah,
allowing me to browse books and then buy the ebook.
Yeah, and I totally get why you're torn. Because it's a cool store model. It's just there's a lot of uncomfortable baggage that goes along with it.
Yeah, independence and Barnes & Noble need to be able to do the same thing in a way that actually that they can make money from. And I don't know that that's possible, especially when you remember that Amazon's goal isn't even to make money in the first place. It's just to have all of the business.
Yeah, which is a very interesting business model.
Yeah, it used to be illegal. When I was growing up, companies would try to do that and sell things at a loss to penetrate the market and put their competition out of business, and they were shut down. Maybe I'm not a legal expert, but it just seems to me that the regulatory atmosphere has changed over the years to the, if you're big and powerful and you're rich and you're successful, then go for it. And this is an American success story, and predatory pricing is an okay way to do business.
Well, under the Obama administration, antitrust is focused on pricing. As long as prices are being made cheaper for consumers, it seems like a lot of things can fly, and I don't like that at all.
Well, it's the middle class people who are struggling to sell these items at a profit in their small bookstores, and so I don't think that practice is a good one, and I would like to see stronger regulatory rules about, you know, selling items at a loss to put the competition out of business, because only a big company can absorb that. And as you said a little while ago, a big company can do that until the other guys fail, and then they move in and take over. So philosophically, that makes me annoyed that we let companies in America get away with that.
I find it frustrating too. However, I went over to 29th Street Mall last night, which is the big outdoor mall in Boulder, so that I could make a quick run into the Apple Store. And the brief amount of time that I spent at the mall so reinforced why I shop at Amazon. Because being around that many crazy people who don't know how to drive and don't know how to interact with other humans in an appropriate way really turns you off to public shopping.
Well, that's an entirely different angle, entirely additional angle to this.
Yeah, that's just Boulder, Jeff.
No, the difference in Boulder is what other chemicals are in your bloodstream. It's the same everywhere. All right, and on that note, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. John, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, it's awesome that both of you are able to be on today. I really appreciate it. And Downcast, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, downcast.fm/TDO, so that you can download a copy of Downcast for your iOS device. It's only $2.99 and totally worth it. And listeners, thank you for all of your feedback. I love that that you feel comfortable talking with me, so please keep it up. I'm always glad to read your comments, and we'll see everyone again next week.